the history of the Kunio-kun series, the future of Neo beat-em-ups, and what makes River City Girls stand out in style. I'm the Wolverine Mage, and this is MageCast. One of the most surprising and enjoyable gaming experiences I've had in recent years came to me courtesy of River City Girls, a jewel in the crown of the modern beat-em-up resurrection. Don't believe me? Then have I got a podcast for you. This is a game that apparently few people have played, and I'm out to help change that. Joining me this time around is an old MageCast staple, Aaron, aka Sanity Crypto of It's Virtually a Podcast. Together, we have a conversation that spans the entire history of beat-em-ups, from the arcades to the current era, and everything in between. Well, almost everything. I never officially reviewed this game, so you can consider this episode my substitute in that regard. MageCast is the podcast for conversationalists in a world where we've already stopped listening to each other. To learn more, visit thepixels.com, that's the-pixels.com, and patreon.com/thepixels. You can join our Discord to be a part of the conversation, link in the description, or find me on Twitter at TheWellReadMage or live streaming at twitch.tv/TheWellReadMage. All right, folks, welcome to another episode of MageCast. Rather excited for this one for many reasons. I was shocked, maybe a little appalled, but mostly shocked to discover that so few people have played the game that we're going to talk about tonight. Amazing.
Travesty.
It is a travesty. And yes. I mean, like, this game is so cool. It might be one of the, like, highest coolness factors in any game that I've personally played. But before we get to that, as you have heard, the deep chocolatey voice there of
Hello.
Aaron, aka Sanity Crypto of It's Virtually a Podcast. How's it going?
Hello, sir. Thank you for having me back on. Always good times on the MageCast.
Yes. Thanks for being back on. It had been, it's been since April of 2020. We did an Animal Crossing podcast episode together.
Yeah, when we were both deep in Animal Crossing, because at the beginning of all the pandemic, that was the hottest ticket item, I think, that was out there. So
yeah, no joke. I mean, that was the game of early pandemic right there. Mm-hmm. Early shutdowns. Well, what have you been up to since? How you been? What are you working on? All that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was one of the things. I was like, okay, we're all in lockdown since like March. Like, what are we going to do? It's like, we played Animal Crossing. Let's talk about it. That was that was a lot of fun. And us finding creative outlets was always like a good thing that we all needed to do. And especially because I ended up quitting my job because I had a new baby that was born. It was a baby on the way at that time. It was born shortly after. And there was no childcare options, much less if there was, I wouldn't have trusted them at the time. So I quit my job completely, and I was like, yeah, I get to play video games all day. And then when you have an infant and a two-year-old, it's like, oh my God, I wish I could play video games again.
Right. So,
but no, it's been a blessing in disguise, silver lining. I get to spend a lot of time with my kids. I have got to work a lot of stuff around the house. I have, on my later nights, get to finally get my me time and have been working at the backlog. As I've taken the responsible adult approach, and I don't buy every game at launch now, I now wait because I can get them, unless they're Nintendo games, at a fraction of the cost.
Well, look at you. That's amazing.
I know. Look at me. Backlog. Sanity's growing up. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's just not economically feasible for us to buy every new game at launch. And there are so many games staring at the back of my head right now that I bought at full price or on discount and have never played. It's a shame.
I still pick up the discount ones, even though I'm like, I'll buy Bloodborne now, and I don't know when I'm going to play it, but it's only $14 at Best Buy, so let me get it.
So I did the same thing. What are you playing right now? Anything interesting?
Right now, I actually just replayed, because I do love my Xbox Game Pass, and I noticed that Katamari Reroll was on there. And I already had that for my Switch, played it through on my Switch, played all the other Katamari games except for the PSP ones or the PS Vita ones. And but I was like, I love this game so much, and it's on Game Pass. So I played through that completely. And aside from that, I still play. I do my daily quests or, achievements every day in Forza Horizon 4. So I saw the announcement trailer for Forza Horizon 5 at E3, and it was the most beautiful game I think I had ever seen. It's like it's like when you go to the store and they have those demo games on the TVs to make you buy a TV. That's what it looked like. And I was like, oh, let me check out this number 4. And I got hooked. So I've been playing a lot of modern games lately. Nice. But I've got some retro ones that are on my docket to try out after, because most of the streams I watch on Twitch are retro streamers. So sometimes I'm like, morbid curiosity to actually try out Dragon's Lair on NES.
That is morbid curiosity.
That game is terrible. It looks horrendous.
Yeah.
So,
which is a shame, because I mean, Don Bluth is awesome, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't not the a arcade fan version. Of Space Ace on the Super Nintendo either.
No, not a fan favorite.
Well, what is it's virtually a podcast. That's something you're still doing, right?
Yes, every Mondays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we do a live podcast that we launched at the perfect time, pretty much right before the pandemic hit, because then I don't have to be in the same room as my co-host that we used to do before on a separate podcast. But we both get in our VR headsets and we use an app called Big Screen that is for, you know, you can watch actual movies in there in your VR headset that other people are around in. You can mute them if they're being obnoxious, but you can also create your own little space. And we decided to do a talk show in there. So we sit on a couch and got all our little like bells and whistles in there. And it is rated M for mature. So, you know, put the kids to bed first before you pop in or listen to us on headphones. But we go over the news. We watch people doing stupid things on the internet, which there is a endless bounty of. there's a section called Will Sanity Eat It? Which we find, because I'm an adventurous eater, so they find the most ridiculous things or sometimes food challenging type things from third world countries to see if I would actually do it. But as a man who's eaten tarantula and scorpion and mealworms and earthworms and drank in snake wine from Vietnam, it's usually a yes.
Wow.
But the Lucky Charms hamburger, I say no. So
I mean, the most impressive thing there is you just so elegantly use drankin. And didn't even like bat an eyebrow over that. That's just how eloquent you are.
That's how I roll, sir.
Well, tonight we're going to be cracking out MageCast episode 58 entitled Mean Girls. We're talking about River City Girls, which was released in 2019 by WayForward and Arc System Works for Switch, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. I believe it was digitally distributed at the time. There were a lot of folks asking about this, so I thought I'd bring it up. I got my physical copy from Limited Run for PS4. I believe they had physical copies for Switch as well. I'm not sure about Xbox One.
I was interested in the Switch, but I was like, okay. I wonder if they're going to do this justice when they were announcing it. And then I ended up getting it digitally. And then I really regretted not getting the physical, because I do really, really like this game. I think it's going to stand the test of time.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And we will completely unpack why on this show.
Indeed.
But if you're a PS5 user, one of 10, then you can go to Limited Run, and they didn't even pay me to say this. I'm stuffing Limited Run coupons in my pocket right now. They didn't pay me to say this, but you can get River City Girls for PS5 physical, I think, right now. At the time of this recording. Yeah. So if you have one, there's something you can play.
That's something that upsets me about being Xbox heavy, you know, Microsoft heavy, is that Microsoft's like, no, you can't release anything that we don't give our magic wand wave to. But Sony magically says, sure, make games for, you know, our system. Do it. And so you can get it for Switch. You can get it for PlayStation, but you can't get it for Xbox. Tisk, tisk.
Well, that's the benefit of having multiple platforms, right? And these days, it seems like you kind of want like a main platform and then at least one complementary platform, because exclusives are a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And if you got to have those exclusives, you got to have them.
I've had every system all the way up until this generation. I have my PS4. That's basically my daughter's Netflix device.
Yeah.
And I got all the series of Xboxes. I had the PS2, PS3, got all the Nintendo stuff, of course. But this time I was like, I don't want to like scrape and claw for a PS5 right now. I got my Series X right away, and I was like, I'll get it when Final Fantasy 16 comes out, because I'm gonna need to play that.
You and I are so twinsies. I mean, I said the same thing, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, spoilers ahead, just so you know. And I mean, if spoilers bother you about a beat 'em up, Maybe you got to reevaluate some things in your life, but it's not that bad. It's not that bad. We'll talk a little bit about the ending. The ending is still worth seeing, even if we mention it, in my opinion, but this is not like a story heavy game. It's just got quirky characters and cutscenes, and it's fun.
I'll echo that too. I mean, anything that you're going to hear as spoilers for this game is not going to take away from 95% of the gameplay, and the gameplay is what stands out. Again, you don't play this for the sick story, you know, it's a fun sprinkle upon a awesome beat 'em up.
Exactly. And so to kick us off, I wanted to cite at Info Sprinkles here, who said, "Family tidbit, my boys asked Jen and I a lot of questions about the opposite sex while playing this. I love it more for that reason." Winky emoji, which is a cute comment. And I also bring it up because, to be perfectly candid, and so nobody can, you know, send me an email or at me and just be like, you know, how dare you? But we're two guys talking about a game called River City Girls, and we know that. So you don't have to point it out and just be like, well, why was it? I just like talking with sanity. And we were like, well, what game should we talk about? And he was like, River City Girls. I was like, freaking River City Girls. That's amazing.
Beloved game. And I, as a man who has a daughter as well, it's like, I love seeing female protagonists in games. And, you know, it's, if Info Sprinkles got some, you know, fun conversations of, you know, that he enjoyed with his kids about this, then fantastic. Great.
That's great. Yeah, that is great. I mean, I just played through Super Metroid with my kids. My 6-year-old was super into it. My 4-year-old quasi into it. He showed up.
Oh, interesting.
And some of the tedious backtracking parts he checked out, but my 6-year-old was Samus is so cool. I was like, did you know Samus is a girl? And he's like, what? He's like, I don't like it. And I was like, what do you mean you don't like it? He's like, that means it has a girl. And I was like, no, girls are cool, boys are cool, equality, everybody's cool.
That's right.
Okay? And Samus though is like, has a coolness tier that's like occupied by just herself. And so we started playing Metroid Prime today, and the coolness factor just went through the roof. So Samus is like the cool person in our house right now.
Have you played Metroid Prime before? Or is this your first foray?
Oh, no. Yeah. Played it before. Loved it. Loved it. But it's been a while since I touched on it. So
it's been since the GameCube and when they got released. And I pre-ordered Metroid Prime 4 2 years ago, and it was supposed to be released a year later. And now I still don't know when the release date is. They kept pushing it back. And they gave announcements. They said, it's not fun, so we're going to start over and make it fun. I was like, well, I appreciate that. My pre-order still stands, right?
Don't want to make it a not fun game. You want to make a fun game. Well, hopefully they re-release the trilogy alongside with 4 on the Switch. I think that would be really great.
Man, I hope so. That would be epic.
All that to say that female protagonists are cool. I put together like a huge female protagonist collage at one point.
yep.
To combat the people who are like, Ellie is the first female protagonist in gaming history.
I know.
Do you guys play
Mirror's Edge?
Right.
Mirror's Edge was amazing. Yeah.
Or anything? Have you ever played
Pac-Man?
Yeah. Ladybug from like 1986 or whatever it was.
Have you seen 89? The movie Alien?
So anyway, all that to say, we're dudes talking about River City Girls. Deal with it.
And we love it.
Yep. And we love it. Mage facts. Let's start off with some Mage facts here. Most Western players would likely be familiar with River City Ransom, but River City Girls is actually part of the Kunio-kun series. Although River City Girls shares many gameplay similarities with the NES beat-em-up River City Ransom. So to inject that into our conversation at this juncture, this is part of the Kunio-kun series. Now, you've been to Japan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, can you read Japanese?
My reading has deteriorated. I lived there from 2000 to 2002. In my early 20s, and I could read and write. There's 3 written languages there. Well, 4 if you count Roman characters, which we use. So they use that one too. But they have hiragana, which is them sounding out Japanese words. There's katakana, which is sounding out foreign words. And then there's the kanji, which is the very complex, like single or multi characters that can mean a lot more depth of information than just sounding them out. So that's why there are newspaper can contain a lot more than ours can, or it doesn't have to be as fat. Yeah. So I could read and write the sounding outs of stuff, but the kanji, I only knew maybe 50, and there's like 3,000 in normal operation in Japan. So, yeah, I can understand, I can speak better, and I can understand when reading it in the sound out words or characters or in Roman characters.
So did you, I mean, did you manage to play much Japanese gaming when you were over there?
Even my roommate, who's fully Japanese and everything there, and we'd go in to play a Gundam game. And I was like, all right, here's the instructions. What does it say? And he goes, oh, man, there's a lot. Never mind. Like, just try to play. Never mind. And I was like, yeah. So there was stuff. I was like, because there was a lot of the kanji characters, and it was just a lot of stuff in like one page. I'm like, it's just one page. He's like, there's a lot in there, man. Just try and play. I was like, which way is forward? He's like, I think this. I was like, what does this button do? He's like, I don't know. I was like, so I used to just wing it a lot of times. And I could only play games that were made for kids. Because the fun fact is you can't actually read the newspaper in Japan if you are a high school graduate. You need to go through a full range of college and learn all of the kanji you learn in college as well to be able to understand and read the newspaper. So when they make games for kids, they spell everything out in the hiragana and katakana, which I could read slowly, but I could understand the majority of what was going on. So I would actually play some of the youth games a bit more than I would play like the sweet Gundam games or, you know, the Final Fantasy games and stuff like that. So it's yeah, I had to be humble about it, but a lot of it was just winging it.
I mean, I bet that would favor like retro games, right? Because I can't imagine
For sure
that those would be too complex, right?
I did go to a flea market and pick up a Super Famicom and about 15 games, all that packaged together for about $20. What a score that was. So the RPGs were a little difficult just because I can speak Japanese, but when I watch an anime, they don't speak normally like people do in everyday life in Japan. It's a bit more of like colorful, you know, words and conversations. So it was harder for me to understand. So they do that in RPGs. So there's a Dragon Ball Z RPG game that I was like, man, I cannot understand what they are saying. So it was kind of hard to progress to know where I had to go for my quest. But I played a lot of the beat 'em ups and stuff like that. And I would know, hey, that means a win. That means a loss. That means challenge. That means this. So I could understand like the rudimentary action games.
Wow. So did you play any of the Kunio-kun games?
Not in Japan. My only exposure to the Kunio-kun was, what was that? World Cup was the Dodgeball and then River City Ransom. I played all those in the U.S. I did not actually play any Kunio-kun games in Japan when I was there.
Ah. Super Dodgeball, right? That was on NES?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they actually had the hybrid cart. I had the one. I might still have it. It was Super Dodgeball and the World Cup game. So it had both the sports Kunio-kun games on there. Wow. That was a nice one.
Yeah. That's pretty legit. I mean, so as it turns out, the Kunio-kun series is quite big.
Bigger than I've ever experienced. Yeah. I've only played mostly the ones released to the West. But I mean, they're just beloved characters over there. I mean, every time you'd go by the little like toy capsule machines every once in a while, I was like, ah, oh, cool. I'll get the little guy like washing with his back and his butts showing. And I tried to get it and I was like, oh, I didn't get it after like $3 worth in there, 300 yen. I was like, whatever. I'll get it later.
I really wanted the butt guy. Darn
it. I wanted the butt guy in the sauna.
That's going to be an audio clip right there. Just so you know.
Blessed.
Blessed. Well, you got that was also your cue to read this next bit, too.
All right. The Kunio-kun series is made up of 56 games. Many of them have never been released outside of Japan. And that is where I missed out. I didn't actually seek that out. I knew it was a beloved series, but I didn't know it expanded much past what we saw in the West. I didn't have the obsession with retro video games back in the early 2000s. As you know, then it was like everything was still shiny and new, PlayStation 2 and Xbox original, and you know, so retro was not as hot as it has developed for even myself or just culturally over the time. So I didn't really go seeking out some of the older stuff.
I mean, that's an interesting observation right there. I think like when the PlayStation 2 came out, I was still like, oh man, Super Nintendo's the best. But like it wasn't like, yeah, I'm a retro hashtag retro gamer. I hashtag play hashtag Super Nintendo. It was closer. It was still a little more intimate and still a little more relevant rather than having to, you know, drag up the nostalgia and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, for me, a lot of my youth, I was always a graphics junkie. That I was like, look at the graphics in this game. And I would buy a game for graphics and then be very disappointed that it was a terrible game. And I had to grow out of that after a while. And then after doing that, being a graphics hunter, you after a while, you realize you're like, wow, those old games that had limited resources for graphical content were still the greatest games possible. And that was just part of my, I guess, recursive experience of getting back into appreciating quality games. Despite their limitations, were just some of the greatest things ever made.
I mean, I think everybody's there at some point in their lives if they stick with gaming for a length of time. Because I remember being like, "Oh man, but it's in 3D, and it's automatically better than 2D,
Oh,
right?"
that PlayStation 1 era. Oh, look at this
Yeah,
3D game. Look at
I
Bubsy.
mean,
Bubsy's in 3D now.
like I remember being like, "But Snake has so many polygons. He has so many polygons. Of course, that's better than pixels, right?"
That's
Right,
true.
as I'm like trying to convince myself, but then over time, yeah, you start to realize there's a wealth of reasons to appreciate a game beyond just its visuals.
Yeah.
So
Look, it's
yeah,
Pierce Brosnan's face stretched over this one polygon in GoldenEye. I know. That game did not age well. But you know what does age well? The Super Nintendo games and a lot of the
yeah.
Genesis, a lot of those. So, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here.
No,
They're
yeah, definitely.
retro
And that kind
fans.
of That kind of fits in with the River City Girls shtick too.
Indeed.
Like this is definitely a game that could not have appeared on Super Nintendo, but it has a lot of that 16-bit vibe to it and that nostalgia to it, which we'll talk about
Yeah, the
a little
slowdown would
bit
have been
down the road.
crazy if they did this on
Oh yeah,
SNES.
could you imagine? Yeah,
Oh yeah. Let me ask
it's too
you,
complex.
have you played any of the other 52 games maybe that we've never seen?
No, and I tried. I was going through and like I counted the 56, right? And I was like, well, that's a lot of games in the Kunio Kun series. And then I was like, how many of these like have never made it outside of Japan? I started counting. I was like, so pretty much all of them, almost like,
Yeah.
except for like a few. So I have played Super Dodgeball. I want to say Renegade. Let me look that up real quick because it
Wait,
sounds
the
super.
arcade game NES game Renegade, or was there a specific like, because that
No, I think it was on NES, right? Renegade?
Yeah, Renegade was
Yeah.
on NES. Is that part of the Kunio-kun universe?
Yeah,
Wow.
apparently it
Okay.
is.
That was also an arcade game too that I rushed out to get the NES game, which was a shell of the arcade
Right. Yeah.
version. So
Arcade ports back then were hit or miss, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So I played that. I don't remember too much of Renegade, but I know I've played it. I have played Super Dodgeball. I love River City Ransom, one of my favorite NES games. But I think
Amen.
that the touching point for people with River City Girls, as far as like a frame of reference, is definitely going to be Ransom on NES.
Yes,
Which
100%.
also means that a lot of like the recurring characters in River City Girls that reference other Kunio-kun games is kind of like lost. So when I was playing it, you probably have the same experience then. When I was playing it, I was like, these characters are probably cameos, and I feel like they're supposed to be cameos, but I have no idea like where they
Oh,
came
the
from.
dumpster kid and stuff like that. Like, that would make
Yeah.
sense.
Or
Yeah.
like when you
And
go
maybe
to a
Hasabe, the
shop,
snooty girl or something.
right? Or like when you
Yeah.
go to a shop and like the shopkeeper is like a floating, like muscular goddess, and you're like, that's a little too odd for just like a random shopkeeper. So that probably
Yeah.
comes from somewhere. So as it
Yeah,
turns out,
all over
a
my
lot of
head.
them, yeah, it turns out a lot of them are cameos. The playable heroines, Kyoko and Misako, first appeared in Kunio Tachi no Banka and Nintendo World Cup, respectively. The bullies, Hasabe and Mammy, first appeared in River City Ransom. And there are also cameos from Double Dragon. Those are the ones that I recognize, right? Was it Billy and Jim Bob?
Billy and Jimmy. Yeah.
Yeah, Billy and Jimmy. It was Jimmy from
I
Double
remember
Dragon. Yeah.
yeah, I remember the arcade of Double Dragon. I thought it was so cool because it was the 80s and I was at some roller skating rink and I saw the first time I saw it, and up there it had on the joystick pad it said Hammer and Spike. I'm like, their names are Hammer and Spike. That's so cool. And then later they're like, it's Billy and Jimmy, and I'm like, what happened to Hammer and Spike? Such
Right.
80s names in general. But I
And that
know.
honestly feeds right into your next bit too here.
Oh yes. So the boyfriends Kunio Fuji, Fuunji and Riki Samajima were known as Alex and Ryan in River City Ransom. So So Kunio-kun, and Kun is basically addressing somebody who's like your cute little friend, who's a guy generally. So there's Chan for girls and Kun for boys. They're like, hey, Red Kun, what's up, buddy? It's like, my buddy Red. So the Kunio-kun is all based off of him as the focal point.
Yeah, which is why. So I went back and looked like for this specific fact, because I was like, I almost remembered them being called Kunio and Ricky in River City Ransom, but I was like, that's not correct. I know one of them had an R name, and I went back and looked, and I was like, oh, it's freaking Alex and Ryan. Like, these normal sounding names over here.
Yeah.
That they changed.
Yeah, this is also from the Nintendo Power days, where I would read those things cover to cover, and I would get all the lore of these games before I'd buy it. And I remember reading about Alex and Ryan. These guys go around to save their girlfriends and, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, wow. So I thought Alex and Ryan forever. I didn't ever know Kunio or Ricky were the possible names.
Yeah. So localization did us dirty again.
It sure did.
that's the way that it goes. One of the developmental goals for River City Girls was to sort of like up the stylishness of the game and its series. So like, if you look at the wealth of Kunio-kun games that there are, I mean, like 56, that's a lot of games.
Yeah.
It's more like numerical Final Fantasies.
Yeah, I guess we missed Kunio Kart Racer, or was that in there?
No, I don't know. It seems like there are a lot of like brawlers and sports games.
Okay.
So, but going back and looking through them, I mean, like, I love River City Ransom. Would I call it like a stylish game? Probably not.
It definitely has a style of its own. I mean, when it came out, it was definitely, you know, much like there's the Toriyama style, like there was the, I guess, the Kunio
it's
style or the River City style.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it really created any kind of specific flair aside from other games of its time.
You know? Right. And then when you look at River City Girls, if they wanted to up the stylishness of the series, they certainly did it with this game. And I guess kind of like comparative that they wanted to was the like the flair of WayForward's Shantae series. So I've not played a lot of Shantae games. I think
neither
I've
have
played
I.
like a bit of one. And they are like very stylish. So that's kind of that touching point for that as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like if they were looking to keep an homage to, you know, what River City Ransom and the whole style was and just up it, I think they hit it out of the park with that.
Absolutely.
So here we go. Double Dragon and Kunio-kun Retro Brawler Bundle was released by Arc System Works, which includes 18 games, including 11 Kunio-kun titles that had never been localized in North America before.
That is cool.
That is really cool. That went below my radar. That's freaking awesome. I mean, especially because I was going to say, it's like, if you think that River City Ransom had this own unique style, I'm like, what about Double Dragon? It's very, very similar. And, you know, here they are as a bundle.
Yeah, put together. And this is another one that I think you can get physical right now from Limited Run in like a year.
Are you listening, Limited Run?
Ship them. Right.
Are you listening? Send the checks.
How long it takes them to send these freaking games out.
Oh, man.
When you buy it from them. But that's pretty cool because so like a lot of these retro collections, sometimes they'll put them out and be like, yeah, but I played all these games. Sometimes they'll put them out and they'll be like, this is the first time these games have ever been released in North America. And that to me is really cool. Like if you care about,
that's a lot just on its own,
but then like more than half of that being like games you've never played before. If you live in North America,
that's pretty
cool. And looking at it, I mean, they look like Dodgeball, Downtown Neketsu Story, Soccer Story. There's some
RPG names, action RPG ones and right, stuff.
I guess there's like cool. Basketball, Soccer League, Fighting Legend, Distant Gold Medal. So probably a mix of brawlers and sports games. But that's one that I'm definitely eyeballing picking up, because if you care at all about preservation, I mean, that's it right there. This is legit, you know, support the official releases. Getting off the soapbox.
And we're both physical junkies too. In a land where everybody loves digital, we still appreciate our physicals. So I might pick that up as well.
See, and I do, unless I have to move. Like, yeah, that's the thing. When I moved this year, I was like, shoot, Why did I collect so many video games? It's like boxes and boxes of video games.
Yeah, like those are all the video game boxes. And those three boxes are personal items from my wife.
Like it was perfect that like my dad drove down here with us across all these state lines when we moved. Nice. And so like we put most of our junk in like a shipping compartment and they just moved it across the country for us, which is really nice. I didn't have to drive a U-Haul for this like huge drive. Right. And so but I was like, I don't trust like my video game boxes in this shipping container. So I made my dad haul them in his truck, like just stuffed his truck with video game boxes. And I was like,
dad,
don't
this
get
is
in
very
an
precious.
Accident.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
That's like when we did move to Japan, I didn't trust checking my bag or shipping my Xbox and my Dreamcast. So I literally had it in my carry-on luggage. So security was like, oh, look at this. You have an Xbox? I'm like, yeah, I don't want them throwing it around. So,
yeah. I mean, I know I get it. I when I went to England, I had my Super Nintendo just loose in my backpack because I was mm-hmm. like, this is going to be close to me at all times.
That's right.
I'm not having that. It's not going.
Our priorities are perfectly in line, sir. Perfectly.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're not at all unhinged or anything like that. No. Speaking of unhinged, several NPCs were voiced by internet personalities. This was pointed out by @WiskOsk. That's WSCOSK. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but I just did. Such as Sean McLaughlin, a.k.a. Jacksepticeye, who did, who's it, Godin? Godai. It was Godai.
Godai. Oh, Godai. Okay.
Yeah, the guy with like that's living in Japan that has like a strange like Irish accent for some reason.
Yes.
Like the first time I was playing this, I was like, why? But... okay, I was like, maybe he's just a blue-haired exchange student or something. But I don't know, like, a ton of internet personalities. But, like, once this guy pointed that out, I was like, oh, okay. And, like, I looked at the cast list, and I recognized Sungwon Cho and a couple other names. So, but a lot of them have done, like, anime voices and stuff like that. But some of them are YouTubers, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd pointed out, like, before, too, that... a lot of times, like a voice cast for a video game will get like, you know, one person that can voice kind of like all these NPCs, just different.
That's very
accents.
Typical.
Mm-hmm. And so here seeing like all these different voices for characters that had like a couple lines each.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
I mean, I kind of applaud them for that because voiceover is hard for people to get work and everybody because they'll just, like I said, they'll get that one guy who's already well known, well established, who can do 8 different voices. And then suddenly you're like, okay, well, there's only one other voice to fight for. But this one, every single NPC had their own voice, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah,
so
that is quite neat. Well, to move on here to premise, the base premise of this game is whilst in detention at River City High, students Misako and Kyoko learn that their boyfriends, Kunio and Ricky, have been abducted, kidnapped. So they break out of class to rescue them. If you're concerned about spoilers, that's pretty much it. Like that is,
I know
that is most of the entire game. They'll go around trying to find clues as to where you know.
You spoiled
they went.
The first 5 minutes. How dare you?
Oh no! there are multiple endings though, and they're quite hilarious. I mean, they're pretty funny. So I would definitely say play this game. Don't play it for the story. It's a very like arcade style beat 'em up game that's like got open exploration and RPG elements, but the story is not going to be the most important part about it for sure.
Yeah, and the action's got that cool yet comedic feel to it, so it is a lot of really cool action of like high flying, you know, just martial arts, and then it also has definite wackiness factor to it as well. I mean, that is the majority of the appeal. The story again just sprinkles on top of a really solid core beat 'em up.
Right, because you'll get like cutscenes of dialogue, characters talking to each other, and as we establish, the voices are very like unique. So they're not all the voices like land. Sometimes you'll be like, that guy's doing a voice, like a really hokey voice. But sometimes there'll be like a voice that just sounds like really authentic, and the game is kind of framed by these like literal bookends where you get like a manga sequence. And it'll zoom in on comic panels and stuff like that. And it's really fun. It's just dynamic, dynamic and stylish is how I would phrase it for this game, for sure.
Yeah. And again, it just it accentuates the style that everybody knows that they were used to from the River City. And actually, I was telling you offline a little bit that I was doing some research just to learn some more lore beyond what I got from playing the game through. I think I got the two endings, two of the endings. But I found out that there was a game called, first of all, seeing the reviews of this one, it was, someone was like, this game is awesome. It's a mix of Scott Pilgrim and Streets of Rage. And I was like, man, you guys have never seen River City Ransom before. But
which predates Streets of Rage, right?
Yes, predates Streets of Rage. And of course, Scott Pilgrim the game, because Scott Pilgrim was also very similar to River City Girls, an homage to that exact Kunio-kun style, which they also executed very well. But this must have been a younger player who appreciates those games and found that as his draw into this kind of style of beat 'em up. And I thought that was just kind of interesting to me.
It is interesting. I mean, and I kid, obviously, but that's great, though, that somebody here who isn't, you know, heading straight into their 40s screaming has a landmark, has a touching point as well. Mm-hmm. They can say, ah, this reminds me of this. It reminds me of a very ancient conversation that I had, or it feels ancient, at least a couple of years ago, that somebody pointed out, like, you know, where there's the whole, like, well, it's the Dark Souls of, so like River City Girls is the Dark Souls of Streets of Rage. And like, why, what's our need to like compare games to each other constantly?
But I
think that's, like, on the one side, and I feel your weariness.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I've had that same conversation, and I'm like, not everything is a Souls-like, or it's hard. Just say it's a hard game. Oh, Celeste is the Dark Souls of platformers. You know what? It's just a hard platformer.
Right.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, we used to say NES hard, and then that kind of fell out of fashion. But so, like, I think I have, like, two kind of thoughts on that. And one is that, like, if it's a fair comparison, that's the thing, right? If it's, there's lazy comparisons and then there's fair comparisons. So like, if you're saying, oh, this is just Streets of Rage. No, it's not just Streets of Rage. Like, Streets of Rage is an icon and a long lineage of beat 'em ups, but River City Ransom predates that. And then there's also the laziness of like every game that's remotely difficult is just the Dark Souls of whatever its category is, to the point of it becoming a meme. But at the same time, like, I think that if we only have a limited amount of frames of references each, which is clear because we don't have infinite knowledge, I at least I don't. I can't remember what I had for dinner tonight. Like, I know. You scoff, but sir, I have infinite knowledge. So, I mean, each with our limited frames of reference. Like, essentially what we're doing is just giving the briefest of impressions as to what something is by comparing it to something else that we're familiar with. And I think that on a fundamental level, that's okay. That's fine. That's normal. Like, that happens all the time.
I actually do think that there's that's one thing when people give screen pitches, you know, if someone writes a screenplay and they want to pitch it to a studio, the actual appropriate thing to do is like, oh, it's John Wick meets Love Actually, you know, and you're like, okay, you got to find out in your head what that means. Then it gets explained to you as you read it. But you have to really draw interest by giving it a comparison of something that has already existed in time. So doing that with games should be done in a proper way to frame it so people are interested in or get a good idea of what you're looking at. So that's not the lazy part. The lazy part is just like, oh, this game's hard. It's Dark Souls.
Right. And that would be the equivalent of the unfair comparison, or just like that. At this point, like, to say anything is like Dark Souls is almost meaningless, it seems like. I mean, you remember Cuphead rolled out and you picked out Celeste and a wealth of
Battle
games.
Kid. Yeah.
It's
the Dark Souls of Mega Man is what people have said. And I'm like, well, you're kind of not wrong, but come on. You could do better than that. It's one hit death can. Mega Man. Very hard memorization block. Anyways.
Yeah. It's like shmups. Just on foot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we've talked about a lot about like unique elements of like different categories here in beat 'em ups. Before we talk about unique elements in River City Girls, Just like an easier question. What's some of your favorite beat 'em ups? This is a question that I threw out to the Twitterverse recently and heard about some games that I actually hadn't heard about before. So that was cool.
Well, I have to say that if I'll start at the arcades, that's where beat 'em ups really grabbed me as a kid. I mean, you've got like the X-Men cabinet that had the four players and the multi-screen. You had the Simpsons
game. Didn't they make one with, I beg your pardon for interrupting.
No.
Didn't they make an X-Men one with six players? Did you ever
see
that?
Was it six players? I think so. It had three screens and six players.
There were, there were two X-Men cabinets, one with four and one with six.
I think you're right as well. But you can look that up while I rant about my others. There's also the Simpsons arcade game. Yeah, seriously. And God, there was even like Bad Dudes, which was a horrible port on the NES, but was fun in the arcade. But I mean, all the beat 'em ups from back then. I mean, there's some I can't even remember the names of but then again, you go to the NES and River City Ransom is at the top of my list as far as beat 'em ups on the NES. Again, Bad Dudes translated really, really poorly. Streets of Rage like grabbed me from the moment I saw Streets of Rage 1 on the Genesis. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have this. And I believe it was a launch title for the Genesis as well. So it was one of the first. It was that and Sonic, or it came out quite swiftly after. There was Altered Beast, there was Sonic, and I think Streets of Rage came out at least soon after. And but like that was just like one of those styles that, you know, it's 2D, but at least you had three-dimensional depth of moving forward and back within the environment, which was only really done with River City and arcade games. A lot of them were just 2D flat beat-em-ups a lot of the time on NES. And I mean, and then you get a little bit older into like the 90s. I got Alien versus Predator arcade game. That was super fire to me. And so the arcades really got most of my interest in a lot of beat-em-ups, but some of the, you know, console specific ones, or even some of the ports, really did translate well. So Streets of Rage has to be one of the most emphatic I ever was about beat-em-ups from every one in the series, from 1 to 2 to 3, even though 2 was the best in my opinion. I got 4 from Limited Run, even though I must have got an old batch because our friend Davey got his. I didn't get mine for 3 months later. I was like, that's everybody's unfair. Beaten the game and I just got mine. Everybody said, well, I played it digitally. And like, and Davey's like, I got mine. And I'm like, man, what the heck? So
that's messed up. You know what? You made it through that whole thing without mentioning Turtles in Time, I think, right?
You know what? That one has a humongous love, and I played a lot of that in the arcade. I didn't really like the console port so much, but I was a humongous Turtles fan as a kid, but as I grew up, that's one of the things that I didn't cling with as much nostalgia as I do a lot of other things. So Turtles doesn't resonate with me as far as like deep beloved nostalgia for some reason. I mean, I had all the toys, I watched the cartoons, I played all the games. I'm sorry, I'm gonna offend people here. Hot take. I hate the NES Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. I hate it so much.
So that's the NES one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game, like the home port, right? It's like where the first stage is like the on fire apartment. That's the one on
the
NES.
But that's the beat 'em up, right? I'm talking about the NES one where it's the 2D scroller and then you drive around in the little like turtle mobile and you get the electric seaweed, you got to defuse the bombs at the dam and like.
We don't talk about that game.
That's exactly. But the beat 'em up Turtles were vastly superior, and those were a lot of fun. Although they were really hard on the console because they were really hard in the arcade because they wanted all your money, and they usually got it. So.
Right. Absolutely. So that was Turtles 2, the arcade game for the home port, I guess, on NES is what that was called. And I loved that game on NES. Turtles in Time, I mentioned because anytime you say, hey, beat 'em ups, somebody is going to pop up and say, Turtles in Time! Turtles in Time!
1,000%. Yep.
Did I make it? Yeah. So, I think Turtles in Time is great. It didn't make my top four. My top four would be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game, just out of nostalgia. Played a heck of that at Chuck E. Cheese. So the Simpsons arcade game, you mentioned as well.
Yep. Oh, man.
The Capcom Alien vs. Predator, because there's another one. So that was the arcade one that you and I are thinking about with Lieutenant Kurosawa.
Yes. Yes. Major I always Schaefer. Picked her. I never picked the Predators. Well, who I always wouldn't? Picked Kurosawa.
I mean, it's Ripley just like with a sword.
It's Japanese Ripley. Like, come on. Yeah.
Amazing. It had to.
And then I just love that there's like Arnold in there, just renamed, and he has like a huge robot arm. That's super cool. There was a home port of, I don't know if it was a port of that one or just a different Alien vs. Predator game, but that one's not very good. Speaking of home ports,
I don't think I ever saw that one. That's good. But I did find a little, I got into a kick where I was buying a bunch of like Chinese knockoff emulators because they had some ridiculous games that were never actually released. Like there's one that has Super Mario Brothers 8. And I was like, what? And it's like a pure yellow background and then green pixels, like it's on original Game Boy, but with different colors. And Mario has a cape when he starts and a giant staff that he goes around, and he can't fly with the cape. Anyways, it's horrendous. But I got a kick on buying a bunch of those, and I got one that had touted, it had 20,000 games, and it has the Aliens vs. Predator arcade game on there. And I was like, this is worth the $60 I just paid. So yeah. That was quite the find for me.
No, absolutely. I mean, people will be like, why haven't we seen, or like, why do certain games die, right? And it was like, if you're talking about a licensed game that combined two different IPs into one at a certain period of time, produced by, you know, this developer and then published by this publisher, like it would be very difficult to get that game to see the light of day again. And watch me say that now, and this episode publishes, and then like today, limited run is like, all right, we're releasing Alien vs. Predator, the Capcom one.
After all that bashing Madecast gave us, we're gonna do this out of spite.
That's how it works, right? I looked it up, so I guess there was an Alien vs. Predator on Super Nintendo, a beat 'em up from Activision, which I did not care for, but the Capcom one from the arcades is phenomenal. So you have to specify for Alien versus Predator.
That's good. I did not even know about that one, the Activision one. Yeah, interesting.
You don't have to. You don't have to.
I know. You're right. You're right. It's all over.
Bad. And then for my fourth one, I mean, it's always difficult to pick that fourth spot. Like, so I asked like top four beat 'em ups, and I just put it River City Girls because like it has eclipsed River City Ransom for me. It's just great. It is a really, really solid beat 'em up.
I have gone back to play River City Ransom in my adulthood, and I still, it's one of those games that, you know, you played as a kid and you have all this nostalgia and you have this like deep memories of it. You go back to play it and I beat it within like a few hours. And I was like, why did this game seem so long for me as a kid? I would play it over like weekends. I'd play it an entire weekend. I wanted to get every coin and buy everything and explore every nook and cranny of every level. And as an adult, I was like, all right, well, I got this. I got what I need. Let me move forward. And then I beat the game and I was like, man, that game just seemed short. It seemed like it was a 20-hour game in my memory. That I've had that with a few games, and I'm like, wow, nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think I've ever even beaten River City Ransom. So I'll have to go back and try that.
Oh, well, here, spoiler alert. You basically have to fight a version of the Double Dragons as the main boss, which was kind of like, oh, they do the jumping, twirling spin kick, just like from Double Dragon. It was kind of a cool little... almost Easter egg in there.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'll have to go check that out. Well, so with so many different beat 'em ups having been mentioned, and there's other great ones. Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Stara. Oh my gosh. Welcome to the D&D. Welcome to the D&D world.
That one had great sprite work as far as I remember. Mm-hmm. Another favorite was King of Dragons. Do you remember that one? I think it was Capcom
King
as well.
King of Dragons. That sounds very familiar. I'm going to pull up a tab on that one.
Yeah, dude, look it up. King of Dragons. Knights of the Round was another one worth mentioning. That one's
Knights of the Round. Oh, man. Yeah.
That's good stuff. King of Dragons I played in arcade, and then it was one of those instances where I saw it at home at a Blockbuster for Super Nintendo. I was like, do you can take it home?
That's one of those games I was like, man, I remember this game. It was kind of like Dungeons and Dragons. That's what this King of Dragons. Wow.
Dude, we need to find like an online co-op version of this and play it together.
My goodness. I am 1000% in. Yeah, oh, wow. That game was great.
I love it. When you pick up, or was it? I think when you level up or when you complete a stage, like every character, regardless of whether you pick like elf, wizard, fighter, cleric, or dwarf, they all just go, like, level up. It's like, okay, they all have like the fighter.
That lady has a deep voice.
The elf is like super slender and still, ho! It's
Again, one King voice Dragons. Actor to rule them all.
Yeah, exactly. So there's many beloved beat 'em ups. Captain Commando is another
Captain
favorite.
Commando. That was another one too. Yeah, that was yeah, the arcades really hit it in the late 80s, early 90s. Man, we were just blessed to have all those different versions of different beat 'em ups. And most of them were good. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm talking with my kid brother who's born in 2000. The other day, he remarked, he was like, I feel like I kind of missed out that, like, by the time he was not just born, but like old enough to go to arcades, they're pretty much dead at that time. They had turned into ticket munchers and, you know, like touchscreen games. Like, we went to like a mini golf that had like an arcade attached to it, and it was all like touchscreen games, and they had like an old, like, Jurassic Park shooter. And the Punisher beat him up. And I was like, okay, we're playing Punisher today. I don't even care. That's not my favorite beat him up, but we're absolutely playing this today.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's true. I mean, the golden age of arcades in the early 90s and mid 90s were something to behold. I mean, that was what I was really lucky to see, is because arcades were already starting to fizzle in the late 90s. And then I moved to Japan, which... I mean, some people may know this now, but I mean, back then, I had no idea. Nobody really did. Is that arcades... never fizzled there, and they were very much a very popular first date spot. If you take a girl to an arcade, totally normal. She's not gonna be like, ew, video games, you know. And then also being in that arcade, and then suddenly work gets out around 5 or 5:30, and the arcade gets flooded with businessmen and like secretaries, and they're all in their nice outfits, and they just flood the arcades. And like, you know, businessman loosens his tie and throws it over his shoulder and sits down at Virtua Fighter, and they face the cabinets back to back, so you can't see your opponent. It's not side to side. So it's back to back. So you don't know who you're even playing. And then some guy was just destroying me. And I look over and it's like this pushing 60 like Japanese businessman who's like sweating and furiously just like pounding the joystick. I'm like, man, this is a totally different universe. So it was just nice to see that arcades are like thriving on every corner over in Japan since way back when. And it's something that made me, you know, miss the heydays of like the early 90s was just like the golden age for me, at least as far as arcades were.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I spent a lot of time in arcades growing up, and I wish that my kids could have that experience, but it's just not the way of the West right now. Not really the way of the world right now either.
That's very true.
It's, I mean, I think like it's virtually common knowledge now that like Japanese arcades thrived.
Thriven while
they kind of languished in the West. So that sounds really cool to me. Here's a deep one. Here's a deep reference. Do you remember amazing title, Spider-Man, the video game? It was a beat 'em up where you could play as Spider-Man. You guessed it. Black Cat, Namor, or Hawkeye. Yes. And there were platforming stages where like the zoomed out. And like you were tiny and you're like on these platforms, and like an early boss was Venom, but he was humongous. He was like destroying
things and stuff like that. Yes, you remember that? Yes. I do remember that because I always picked Hawkeye.
Why?
And I hated Namor. I thought Namor was so boring. I'm like, why do you?
Because he is.
Go in the water. What are you doing here?
He's like boring Aquaman, if you could possibly imagine that.
I know. Man, insult to injury there. I know, but I always pick Black Cat or Hawkeye just because I was like, everybody wants to be Spider-Man. I'll be, you know, somebody auxiliary. And Hawkeye, I was like, good, I stay away from you. I'll just shoot arrows. You don't hit me, hopefully. But I'd still die and feed my quarters.
This is a game that I discovered, and like very few people remember it, so I like bringing it up and like meeting somebody like you where like, oh, I do remember it. That's cool. But I discovered it at an airport. And like airports in Hawaii, I guess, had arcade cabinets in the 90s, and I discovered it, and I really wanted to beat it, but our airplane was boarding, and so I was like, just leave me behind. And my parents were like, no. So
I'll get the next flight. Just go.
And I never saw the game again for like 20 years or so, like a long time, until I found MAME.
And, it was more rare. I didn't play it so much, but I do remember it because It was at a local Orlando, back when I lived in Orlando, it was, I guess different times. Like nobody would do this now. I was like, you know, 12 years old. My mom's like, here's $20. I'll be back in 3 hours. You know, just leave me at the mall at this open air mall. I'd go to the magic store and buy some, I don't know, fake dog poo, and then go to the arcade and, you know, try to milk my $20 as long as I could. And that was there. I do remember that. There was and then Street Fighter, whatever the one they added, T-Hawk and DJ. It was the new Street Fighter. Yeah, I don't know which one that is.
Street Fighter lore is past me. But yeah. Like you mentioned, you played as Hawkeye or Black Cat. I always pick Black Cat in the Spider-Man game because I typically pick female characters to play as in games. They're typically faster and more agile and can link combos together more easily.
That's
to the frustration
true.
Of my six-year-old, as I kind of mentioned earlier. Yeah. Like he'll ask me, how can we always pick the girl characters? I mean, because they're awesome and they're easier on the eyes than the guy characters. But that kind of brings us back to River City Girls. Now we've talked a lot about other beat 'em ups. Obviously this is a beat 'em up here where you play as girls. But what are some like unique elements of River City Girls that set it apart from a lot of these titles that we've mentioned?
I would say that it's also a sign of the times that we are appreciating the older style as well. I think as the world has kind of evolved, like I said, you know, in the 2000s and whatnot, people weren't making retro style games. Everything was 3D this and all, like, what limits can we push as far as graphical content and interactivity? But I think that now that's becoming a norm is like modern indie games that have that retro feel. I think that this one, even if it weren't attached to a beloved series, even if people, and there are people who have never seen River City Ransom or maybe not Scott Pilgrim, this game would stand out on its own completely as just a great action, like cartoon style action beat 'em up with some fun wackiness and cool action and unlockables. Like, it's got all the stuff that really hits the marks for me, is that it's not just I'm a big strong guy and here's the beginning of the game and I'm just the same guy until I get to the end and these are my 4, 5, 6 moves. You know, there's stuff about replenishing health and leveling up and choosing which moves to unlock and other traits and stuff like that. So that hits a lot of marks for me as far as depth of a beat 'em up. That a lot of beat 'em ups don't have that form of depth. So I think this could stand alone 100% without being connected to a beloved series.
Yeah, gotta agree. If it wasn't a Kunio-kun game, it would still be a really good standout title. I think, like, if you have those connections to Kunio-kun, then that's cool, you know?
Yeah.
You can see some of those references, at least. More, I guess, if you live in Japan and are familiar with the Japanese Kunio-kun games.
Yeah, but, missed that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you touched on some of it there. So, like, one of the I love beat 'em ups, and we talked about several here. Obviously, we both love beat 'em ups. But I think, to be perfectly honest about a lot of arcade beat 'em ups, and certainly their ports as well, after a while, it just kind of gets monotonous.
Yeah.
Particularly if they're long. Yeah, Knights of the Round. Yeah,
is very well known for being extremely hard. I've been watching one streamer who's been playing it for 3 months off and on, but he's like, he's trying to beat it.
3 months.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, he plays it like once a week, and then he's like, okay, screw this game. Oh, yeah, let's go. Let's play something else. Because it is so. He only plays it one player too, so it's because there's no online. So I think it's extremely hard. So I don't know anybody personally that's beat. I'm sure people listening are like, I've beaten it 6 times. I'm sorry. I applaud you. But no, I don't know anybody who's beaten it, because it's really hard to get through unless you have the unlimited quarters thing going on. I think he's trying to do it on like the 3 continues or something like that. So there is that.
I want to say I beat it as a kid with the 3 continues. I don't know, though. I mean, it's a hard one. I tried playing it as an adult and couldn't do it.
That's like me and Bionic Commando. Used to smoke that game as a kid. I played as an adult. I'm like, gosh. Yeah, how did I do that?
It totally happens. But you figure, I mean, like those, like Knights of the Round. Mm-hmm. Linear. It's going to be the same experience every time. You can pick 3 different characters that have slightly different move sets and like speeds and power. But it's pretty much what? Like a jump, an attack, and then like a special.
A super, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's about it. And like, you could ride a horse, I think, every once in a while, and like, that's cool, sweet, a horse. And Knights of the Round, even though, has the whole like leveling up and your gear changes, that sort of thing.
That's true. It does.
There's just something.
Yeah. More so than like Golden Axe. Golden Axe was, you know, other than like, oh, I got this many potions, now I can do an even stronger super of, you know, this move.
Right.
But it was very, very monotonous in general.
Like those, they're like, we love those games. But again, to be honest,
of course,
there's a kind of monotony that seeps in because all you're doing is beating M up. Like that's the title of the genre. So
yeah.
I think the cool thing about River City Girls is you have some open exploration. You have the RPG elements. So like you can get level ups, you can unlock new moves. Mm-hmm. So like when you first play, you can unlock basic moves like stomping a character when they're on the ground, or picking them up and throwing them around, or using them as like a blunt weapon.
Yes. Love that one.
Just like, yeah, like a dash attack, stuff like that. And then eventually when you reach dojos, you can spend in-game currency to purchase new special attacks and new regular attacks and like extend your basic combo. And so those kinds of things, I think, definitely give legs to the beat-em-up games where, you know, like if you were just to re-release something like Knights of the Round, it's a great game, but you'd tire of it. You get tired of it pretty quick.
Yeah, and I think indie throwbacks to that style. I mean, here's another way that they do it. So even Streets of Rage is also very similar, but I do think Streets of Rage took a little bit of extra effort with every time you go to a new stage, the music changes. It's intense music. There's dynamic backgrounds. It's like it does change enough of the environment and the experience to make it feel less monotonous than some of the older games. You're not just on open field, then forest, then open field, then on a boat, then or whatnot. I feel like if, and again, to talk about music, I mean, River City Girls, whew boy, that one has.
Yeah, we'll get there. My goodness.
Yeah, so it's so I think they've combined both of those elements. So it's, if you're just a plain out beat 'em up, but you change enough of like the experience as far as how you progress through the game, that could add some more life to it. But the older games were just about like, you know, can you get through this challenge? So it's there's definitely different facets that they've taken, and I think that River City Girls has definitely incorporated kind of all of those together with their own specific flair as well.
Yeah, and just beyond sort of like adding. Because we could mention, you know, all of the features that have been added to the base kind of beat 'em up scheme. And obviously there's things that it lifts wholesale from River City Ransom as well, like, you know, the big sprawling city where you can backtrack and do all this and that. But I think a big difference is there's no lives and no continues. I think that was also the case for Ransom, if I remember right. But
I believe you're correct. I think you just lost money. Which I think is the same here. Yeah, you just lose a portion of the money you collect.
And that idea, I think, is what differentiates Ransom and River City Girls from like your typical arcade beat 'em up. Because if you lost freaking in a game that's like, if we could say it's monotonous, then you're going to start over from the beginning again? No. Just no.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. I think that gave a... They gave a different feel to the beat up in general because, yeah, having continues in River City Ransom and having to start back over at the very beginning, it would have been a different game to me, definitely. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. To most people. But I think I appreciate the style they chose to go with as far as like, well, you lose some of your hard work, but not your progress, essentially. So I do appreciate that as a different style of beat 'em up.
Right. It's a little bit of time loss, but not starting over from the beginning again. I think that would be very... discouraging. Mm-hmm. And I get that was a normal thing for, you know, a lot of the beat 'em ups in the early days. But I think here, especially for a game at this scale, like it's a fairly big game. Was there like 5-6 boss fights? And they're fairly spread out and there's a secret boss
that I didn't find. Yeah. Did I find? I think I did find the secret boss.
Who was the secret boss?
I think you get the secret boss after if you beat it with the second with Kyoko. I did it with Misako at first. I let my daughter pick who.
Oh yeah.
I get to be. Yeah. Then you fight the secondary final boss. I think that was it.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which we won't spoil. Shall we not spoil that?
We shall not spoil it. No, that's a fun reveal. That's a fun reveal. They can figure that one out.
Right. You guys should play it. And it is pretty fun. You should play it. Yeah, I'll have to play it at least 2 times through to get it that second time, but. Very.
I will tell you how to cheese it the second way through, though, if you want.
Oh yeah. I think we can skip that. But okay. Even as far as the boss fights go, I mean, they're very creative boss fights. Like the first one against Misuzu, it's like this like beefy or self-described meaty, yes. like actual woman that is not like at all a high schooler, but has been like held back in high school for like. It's generations, like a
30-year-old bodybuilder,
right? Yeah, that's like stuffed into like a high school uniform and totally occupies like the Bebop Rocksteady boss fight,
yes.
like a heavy tank type character. But not all the fights play out like that. I mean, you have Yamada who like can teleport and do all these magic attacks. The ones that really start like being like, "Whoa, this is different," is Hibari, that spider. Fashion designer
who has
like a 2D platformy kind of a boss fight, and then
That was a little bit of a style change, which I thought was unique.
Yeah,
it was one of the more challenging bosses to kind of grasp. Yeah,
definitely. The one that gave me the hardest at time actually was Yamada. I don't know why he just this was hard. Oh, and there was a Bobo. Remember the big muscle bound dude?
Yes,
that was pretty fun. But another one that was real creative was Noise, because it was like, what am I playing, like Guitar Hero now? No! Like super confused by that. But that was really
I do appreciate that they did that. Some of that I felt like the whole like genre mixing of like all these different type of game styles, that was like fun. Some hit better than others, but none of them I didn't hate any of them at all. Some I was like, okay, you know, let's just do this one. But I still think that was very creative of them, and it just adds to more of the flavor and variety of what they were trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been overdone, right? Like, you get to the Obobo boss fight, and it's like, tap circle to arm wrestle him, and you've been like, what the heck is this crap? I want a boss fight.
I know. Yeah. So,
I mean, I'm glad they kind of didn't go too far. I see what you're saying. I'm glad they didn't jump the shark there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another, like, significant difference to point out is you can recruit basic enemies in this game.
Oh, so, yes. Like,
typically when and it's the last enemy in a screen, if they've taken some hits, sometimes they'll like drop to their knees and like beg you to spare them, and then you can grab them and tap, I think it's L1 on PlayStation, and recruit them, and then you can summon them a la like Marvel versus Capcom, where you can like pick a summonable character. So
to that's come in neat. And do one strike or one type of move and then jump out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you could collect like the different color swaps. And you could collect each enemy, and sometimes, you know, they might be more useful in this or that scenario.
Which yet another facet of video games is people that love collectibles. Like people want to like collect them all. And that actually gets into when I was actually doing a UCLA course on video game development, which was like one of the first times they ever taught anything video games. They talked about how every player is a diamond, a club, a heart, or a spade. You know, diamonds are wanting in there to just amass everything. They want to get everything. They want to gather everything. Clubs want to go in and just beat everything down. They just want to beat the game. They just want to be the best. Spades, they want to dig through the game. They want to find every nook and cranny, the collectionists, the explorers, the you know, finding every Easter egg. And the hearts are the social people who want to play games just to be social and play games with other people. Which I thought was a really interesting example. But yeah, I'm definitely in the spade category, because I want to collect everything, and I want to try to find out, you know, what facets are there, and if the game's interesting to me, I want to see every bit of it. So
now let me ask you a question. Have you changed suits over time?
I do change suits depending on, I think, the game and what the game rewards. You know, sometimes when a game's just really challenging, a la Dark Souls, like specifically Dark Souls, not a Souls-like, I don't care to collect everything. I don't need to amass wealth in the game, even because it's very easy to lose. And if you do have a lot, you can level up. But I go in there as a club. I'm like, I just want to beat every single character, every single enemy. I want to know how to do it. And those hard bosses, I just want to be able to defeat them. And that's where the club in me comes out. You know, Mario Party, you better go in there as a heart. Because if you go in there as a club, you're going to have a bad time, okay? But at heart, I mostly enjoy games. And I know after talking to a lot of retro people and even other people, it's like not every person likes exploration games and stuff where you do have mm-hmm. tasks or unlockables and this and that. Like when I do have that and it's rewarding, yeah, I'm definitely a spade. And I want to just unlock every bit of the game or collect every facet. So with this, when you could get these enemies, when I was like, oh, okay, well, there's still one that looks like a zombie. I've got the one in the white shirt with the red hair. I've got the one that's a black shirt with the brown hair. I've got the blonde one with the pink. And then there's one that's like a zombie with like red hair and green and looks, you know, desiccated. And I'm like, I can't find the zombie one. And if you look online, you got to go to certain areas. And after like the third wave, then certain ones will come out. So there's ways you have to like go through. Now, for me, I was like, okay, well, I do enjoy this game, but I'm not, after I've already beaten it twice, I'm not going to go through it to every single section of the map just so I can fill up that list. But that also leads into why I love Xbox so much, because that achievement score feeds my dopamine quite strongly. I do. So getting unlocking all those would unlock an achievement, which would give me more achievement score and all that stuff. So
I mean, it's a fair answer that, like, it depends on the game, right? Mm-hmm. I think in any instance, like if you're looking at collectibles, but like the collectibles kind of suck or like there's no reward, mm-hmm. then that might not work for the diamonds. Or if mm-hmm. the game is unfairly hard, that might not work for the clubs. Or if mm-hmm. your kind of navigational controls aren't there, then your game might be about exploration, but that might not work for the spades. Then if your internet keeps crapping out, or your servers don't work, then that's
then
not
break
work
my heart.
Yeah, right.
Just exactly. Shatter the heart. Yeah.
But I asked the question about like changing over time. And so I guess like when you laid that out, dude, I was like jiving with you. That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
It is totally.
I hate that you said that. That's so California. I wish that there was like a fifth suit. And I couldn't think of one. And I was like, I don't know that there is. So initially, though, I would have said like 10 years ago, I was a diamond for sure. Like mm-hmm. I was about getting every item, hitting that 100%, getting mm-hmm. the platinum trophy, getting, you know, unlocking the ending, getting new game plus the star, the crown, the hearts next to like my save file. Mm-hmm. You know, I would play RPGs growing up and never use the items, never resell old weapons because I was like, I don't know if I'll ever need it.
I'm finishing this game with 99 of everything, baby.
Right, exactly. And then on the final boss, like if you had a character that could throw or like weapons that cast spells or elixirs, I'm like, I'm just going to spam elixirs all day, baby. Yeah, but over time, I found that I'm no longer a diamond. Now I'm a club. I think that there's reasons for that. I think that some games overdo it on collectibles. You give me, so like Breath of the Wild, I loved Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. A lot of people love Breath of the Wild. It has too many Koroks in it, dude. Like,
I got all the Koroks. I did.
There is, like, I love collecting. I love exploring. But there was like at a certain point, I was like, why am I doing this? There's no reason for me, especially when I found out what you get. I was like, there's no reason for me to get all these Koroks. There just isn't.
I gassed out trying to do all the recipes. I was like, I'm not doing this. Nah, and then build all the armor and all the recipes. And
just imagine if they'd attach that to an achievements or a trophy system. And, you know, that might work for some people. But for me, I couldn't do it. And another reason is because now I'm more aware of my backlog. Like when I was, you know, 10 years ago or when I was a kid, I wasn't like, oh, I have a backlog of games. Because like when I got a game, it was a birthday or Christmas.
Yep. For the next 30 to 60 days.
Right.
Or even plus on some occasions, aside from rentals. Exactly. That was the game you had.
Yeah. You had rentals, sure, for a weekend. But those went back on Monday. As far as like games that you owned, like you would play those to death. And I think that appeals more to the diamond mentality. Mm-hmm. But now with my backlog, with like the fact that I like write about games and produce content about games, like I cannot spend 500 hours looking for Koroks. I just can't.
Maybe this rock.
No. Like for forever, just the grinds. The game that actually broke me on being a diamond was Final Fantasy 13, which I have right now kind of have like mixed feelings about. I think there's things that it does really good and then things that it doesn't do really good. But I tried, it's the last game that I tried to platinum. And to get the platinum, you had to grind these like adamantoises, I think they were called, and get like a quasi rare drop, like a platinum ingot or something like that. And then use those to get all this stuff. And eventually, I mean, I tried it. I did for like a day and I was like, I'm not having fun. Like, what's the point of a little bing in the corner of the screen that I could show to somebody, hey, look at how many platinum trophies I got. And the guy is like, I pass a guy on the street. Did you know I have 16 platinum trophies? Nobody cares.
Everyone, so, I have 16 platinum trophies.
The bragging rights faded out for me. The comparison faded out for me. And this is a conversation I've had with other people that like, I get for other people why trophies and achievements work for them. But I push back against any. So like I've met people that have suggested that like achievements and trophies should be the standard for all video games. And I think that's ridiculous. I don't think that adds anything to games. A lot of times they're like meaningless, but a lot of times like that Final Fantasy 13, I didn't want to do it anymore. So now I'm just all about like, if I beat the game, that's enough. So like I beat Super Metroid, like I said earlier in this podcast, got like 63% items acquired. And I was like, that's sad. In like 6 hours of playing this game, because I couldn't remember anything.
Well, have you heard of retro achievements?
No.
You know, that's a thing. There's a whole retroachievements.com. I think that's what it is. And you can basically go in and you register on there and you I think you can even somehow sync your game to it. So people do it on stream and it's like, oh, I want you to play River City Ransom and beat it by, you know, killing every enemy at least once. And then like this, it'll actually have achievements. Someone has gone out, or groups of people have gone out and set retro achievements for Diablo on the PC, for NES games, for all this stuff. And you can log them yourself and you get an achievement score on retro games. And I get what you're saying is that I know it's not necessary for gaming. I do think, I mean, I can personally attest anecdotally that the reason I do stick with Microsoft is not only for my community there, but if the PS5 came out with all these exclusives, I would be heavily torn being like, but my achievement score, I worked so hard over all these years and I'm not going to be building it anymore. And now I'm going to start with these trophies, which I don't have very many. Okay. But I do it. It literally would give me pause because of a meaningless number. Well, but yeah.
But here's the thing. It is a game. It's not part of the game, but it's a game in itself, right? It's a gamified mechanics
outside of the game.
Exactly. So I get why that appeals to people. I shouldn't be surprised that there's a retro achievements thing out there. And I think that would be most interesting for like replaying games, but like what was happening
to old games that people have already beaten or are already really good at. And they're like, well, I could get all these retro achievements. And so I saw a guy playing Adventure Island 1, 2, and 3 and Super Adventure Island. And I was like, man, why do you do this to yourself?
Well, I mean, like, so I just recently played through Zombies Ate My Neighbors twice in a row. Now I can beat it in one sitting. No problem.
Oh, you could probably get a sweet retro achievement, sir.
Right. Like if there were added things to it, then that's pretty cool. Like that's something that can add to the game experience. But what was happening to me, though, is not like leaving aside games that I've played continuously for like the past 25 years. Like I would buy a new game, never played before. And the first thing I would do would be to go to like the PlayStation Trophies website. Being like, how many times do I have to play this game through?
Oh gosh.
And it'd be like, you have to play the game through 5 times. So I'd be like,
then hard. Then you unlock extreme, and then you do it on extreme. Right. Then you find all the little collectible thingies in blah, blah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And so the thing is, like, I like that you point out there's four different kinds of people. So I shifted at one point. That was cool to me that, like, oh, sweet. Like, I can get everything if I just replay this game five times. But at a certain point, I was like, that does not work for me anymore. So,
yeah, I'm a spade at heart with the diamond propensities. And then, I mean, heart, I guess it's fun to play with friends, but unless it's like a pure multiplayer, you have to enjoy some of it. But if it's a beat 'em up or if it's a competition game, I'm pure club, baby. I'm there to best the other person. And I want to fight the best. So.
Right.
But yeah.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. That's interesting. Well, moving on here, what are some pros and cons for this? So we each listed a pro and we each listed a con. Maybe let's start with our cons first. What do you think?
So we actually talked about how this was unique and also followed the River City Ransom, where it's like you don't just go linearly through the game. You can go back and like try to, you know, grind some coins and go to stores and go back through levels. I found after a while the repetition of backtracking, of the forced backtracking for the side quests. I was like, okay, I got to go four screens back. So you go back to the screen and then you go, you have to fight all the guys there. And then you go back to the next screen, you fight all of them there. You get the thing. You're heading back to turn it in. You got to fight all the people. And I was like, am I going to fight through every screen? And then I realized, oh, you can literally just run through every level. And so after a while, which I don't like doing really either. I don't like just running, sprinting through a game and not really, you know, playing it by engaging the beat 'em up part of a beat 'em up. But at one point I was like, okay, I'm getting a little, you know, it is getting monotonous just having to like fight these same people all the time over and over. I've already bought all the stuff I need. I've got all the moves to beat the last boss, I think. And so I just wanted to complete this quest. So I was just sprinting back and forth around the map. And I was like, I don't have the magic bullet of how to make that better, I'd say, or, you know, the perfect solution. But after a while I was like, okay, well, I just want to get through all these side quests before I go to the main boss. So I was just trying to hammer through them. So I saw that as a bit of a con after a while.
Yeah. At least there's that bus system where you can kind of jump around, but
yeah, the bus system definitely helped for fast travel.
Yeah. But there's a lot of areas. I mean, let's be honest. It's a big map.
Yeah.
And if you're in like an enclosed area, like the school, like there's different, you know, doors and things like to places to go inside the school. Then if you're going in there, I mean, you can't just warp out of there. So there's definitely like, I mean, you could run past enemies, but still it is backtracking. It is. Mm-hmm. So that's something I totally agree with.
Some people definitely don't like backtracking. I don't mind it. I was a Metroid fan back in the day and Metroidvania is all that stuff. So I don't mind it. It's just after a while, it was like, there was no further reason to backtrack other than me just completing that quest. Again, I don't know what other extra sprinkles they could have added to spice it up or how to change it up. Think Tank could help with that. But I got to a point when I was near end game that I was like, ugh, all right, let me run back over here. I got to take a bus to here, go up there, get this thing, go over here, get this, and then let me get back. Okay, that's done. All right, next. Okay, do it again. And so that was just that was a con. It wasn't a huge detractor for me in any sense. That was just one of the things that I gave a sigh at a couple times near the end
game. Right. And I think we're mature enough to point out a qualitative error that doesn't actually, like, we're not one of those that are like 0 out of 10, you're backtracking. But it's like, it's part
Let's
of the
review
experience.
Bomb them now.
Right. It's a con, but it doesn't destroy the experience. Here's like my big con for this game was there's no online co-op. And in today's day and age, I think that hits a little harder.
I used the word criminal. I think it is criminal to release a game in this day and age and not have it, if it's a multiplayer game, and not allow online co-op.
What kind of online co-op I would like is like, I don't really want to see, like, especially in a game of like this scope and complexity, I wouldn't want to see like random pairing or anything like that. But you know, being able to like invite a friend on your platform of choice to play with you. Like if you and I could have played through this game together on stream before
that would have been amazing.
Yeah. It would have been so fun. So I ended up playing it by myself instead, which was still fun. And there was that element of having like a live audience and chatting with them that makes that fun. But there's definitely an additional element to that, especially if you turn on friendly fire. There's definitely
a
special element of like the immediacy of a real human presence and not just like an AI like playing through with you. So couch co-op is my co-op of choice. If I have the options, I would say couch co-op all day. But now, you know, like I've moved. I don't know a lot of people in this area. My like the nearest person that I know real well is my brother, and he's like an hour away, and he's not exactly somebody who's going to sit down and play this game with me like over and over and over again.
Yeah. I was just going to say, again, it's like if you're going to release a game that's multiplayer that people are going to be excited about, you got it. I mean, I'll just say Mario Party didn't have online play until when? It's like, come on. It's a party game. You should play this with, like, me and my wife should be able to play with you and your wife on, like, some Saturday, even though we're in, you know, 3-4 states away from each other. So it's...
What? When did it start having online play? Because obviously, yeah, the first Mario Party on N64, there's no way.
No, only Mario Party 10, the newest. I think it's 10 is the newest one. They are adding an update, or they are adding or have just recently added an update to finally allow online play. Like, just finally. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that's during totally the Wii U. A Nintendo. Yeah.
That's totally a Nintendo move. Absolutely.
It is. So, yes, on to the pros. I will say the nostalgia and authenticity was, as I did say, this game would stand alone without having a nostalgia attachment. But I felt that they didn't abuse the idea or like the franchise or anything. I felt like they respected the whole style. And I felt like they took it and they just elevated it quite a good bit. I think it felt like River City Ransom, but it felt like mm-hmm. a 16-bit version, but it also felt like there was a lot of modern, you know, thought and idea process that went into it. It hit the nail on the head of me. If somebody didn't say it was called River City Girls, it was what some other name, I would be like, wow, their inspiration, because they always have spiritual successors too. If they can't get licenses, they can't call it River right. City. I'll find some of those spiritual successors. I'll say the same thing, that they really honored what their inspiration was. And I felt like this one really nailed it with that one.
Yeah, spiritual successor is a great phrase to introduce to this conversation. This does not feel, in my opinion, like a spiritual successor. It feels like a straight sequel. I mean, it has that authenticity. It has that draw of nostalgia. Like the tutorial bits in this utilize the NES sprite for Alex. That's yes. cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah. No, again, a perfect throwback, and you're right. And as far as them having access to the actual license and not being spiritual successor, I think that they did it totally right. And that's why I was so excited about it when I finally played it. I did play it a little late because when it was announced again, I was like, let's see how it turns out. And then it turned out, and I was like, oh my goodness, they did this amazingly. So it's, yeah, that's why it just gets all the high marks from me as well.
Nice. Nice. So for me, I would fail the members of the audience right now if we did not stop and talk about the music.
Yes.
Which might be like my favorite thing about this game. So the music was composed largely by Megan McDuffie. And she also performed the vocals for most of the tracks in the game.
She crushed Chipzel, it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Chipzel did the boss music, which is kind of like remixes of classic River City Ransom tunes. And McDuffie mm-hmm. did some remixes as well. And then Nate Wants to Battle and Dale North created the opening and ending songs. So like when I, again, so few people have played this. And when I was playing it, I was like, oh my goodness, I was just like blown away. Like I was on the floor on my back. I woke up in the hospital and they're like, what happened? And I was like, I listened to the River City Girls soundtrack and I was not ready for it.
Like you're the fourth one today.
Yes. Right. Introducing it to people and just being like, you guys got to listen to the soundtrack. They'll listen to the first one, the first track, which is like the opening theme song. It's like, we the River City Girls, has like that like punkishness to mm-hmm. it. And people are like, eh. Like, no, you got to listen like the in-game music that hits, like the McDuffie music. That's like this like 80s synth wave has to be, if you want to talk about like authenticity, this has to be some of the most like authentically sounding 80s music as far as like the romanticization of the 80s, not mm-hmm. like the actual 80s when everybody just had AIDS and like was dirty, but like the 80s of like the movies, the 80s of like the neon, like cyberpunk lights and stuff like that 80s is this soundtrack. And it's so good.
Yeah, that vibe exists very strongly. And yeah, from just like all the level music, it's like it gets you like hype, it gets you jived, and then the bosses come out, and it's yeah, it's that was and you know, as I said to you earlier, it's like it's on those old GamePro ratings, they'd always have it, and the, like sound was always there. And I used to question, I'm like, does anybody really get great marks on sound when they deserve it? You know, and this is one of the games that would have gotten up there as like an 8.5 or a 9 for sure, like easily.
Yeah, absolutely. There are very few tracks on here where I'm like, eh, skip it.
It's like yeah, actually, I don't even know if I had any skip it tracks, honestly.
No,
maybe during the like, dialogue scenes, but even then it was just like the little like almost like anime like conversation little plink 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 plink
right to go right on. Right no and yeah. I get that, but like I think there's a bit of like the jarring like clash between some of what Chibsil did and some of what McDuffie did. But then at the same time you realize like this is boss fight music, so it stands out.
Yeah,
hang on.
Blessings.
Hey, thanks. What was I gonna say? Oh yeah, but those. So I mean, just listening to this soundtrack, and I've listened to this soundtrack like consistently since I played it last year, and I've not gotten tired of it. Like replaying it again on stream recently, I'm just like, dude, Bully is fantastic. The Hunt is fantastic. The vocalization is amazing. It's such a good soundtrack. So like this is my holy grail right now for finding this on vinyl, and unfortunately like it's on eBay for like a couple hundy. I'm like, I'm not gonna shell that out for like a pressed piece of wax.
Yeah, but
I'm hoping for a repress eventually, because this soundtrack is like, at this point, it's one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. It is
yeah so you've got quite the video game vinyl collection going on. That's been a yeah, new hobby for you recently, huh?
Well, that's what happens. You know, you lose your job and you go into a pandemic and you're like, well, guess I better spend some money then, huh? So
very true.
Yeah. But collecting those is fun. But that in particular is it's such a great soundtrack. So I highly encourage you, if you're listening, and you know, like in this podcast, like I've opened with a little bit of music. And then I'm closing with a little bit of music from the game. It's like, if you like just the sound of that, then you have to look up the soundtrack on Spotify. Look up Megan McDuffie. Look up River City Girls. I haven't listened to like much other work that she's done. I know she did a cover of like that Muse track. Our time is running out. Yeah, that song.
Love I it. Have that CD somewhere. Yeah.
Oh, who didn't?
I know.
That was a great CD. Yeah. Anyways, before we get down like the road of like talking about Muse now, the music's great. The music's great.
Yeah. Or play the game and wear headphones, because that will be a great experience as well. That's what I don't do enough of, is playing games with headphones with have awesome audio. And it really changes the experience. But I have to hear when the kids are crying. Otherwise, I'm like, hey, shh, this is a jamming track. I'll feed you later.
You don't interrupt Megan McDuffie. What are you doing?
That's right.
Well, before we bring it to a close, River City Girls 2. It was announced this year. It's coming next year. River City Girls.
Yeah.
2022. That is exciting. I think they've showed off some new playable characters. And I don't know much else about it.
I still have to play through as the boys, as Ricky and Kunio. I've only beaten it with Kyoko and Misako, so I'll have to do that. And if you guys haven't played River City Girls, definitely beat it before River City 2 comes out, because that's you'll want to stay topical, know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they'll do it like a patch, or I guess you could do Parsec. Have you used that before?
I have not.
Do you know what it is?
No.
Like
regale me with Parsec.
Oh, regale. I've never used it, but Parsec, I guess, is something that you can use to play on non-online games co-op with your friends online.
Oh yeah, I've seen some streamers do that for co-op Battletoads on stream when they live states away. That's what that is. I was wondering how they did that.
You know what we should do is we should totally play a dude's run in River City Girls with Parsec.
Ooh,
sometime.
Let's look into that. I'm definitely down.
Okay,
for it.
All right. And we just got to work out the timing and the time zones and all that jazz. That would be super fun. Really
well, fun. I usually lurk on you when you're streaming. Oh, by the way, don't forget to plug your own Twitch channel, by the way. He's on Twitch Magazine's hottest up and coming streamers. You know, he's on the cover there. The well played mage is what it is. Well streamed mage. No, but I can usually, whenever you're streaming, I can usually lurk on you, and all I'd have to do is partition off a good like hour to hour and a half so we could dig in and hopefully do the dudes run. The dudes do the dudes run.
The dudes run. River City dudes.
River City dudes. River City bros. What does make
well,
that
I call Ricky. I just got to say that.
All
I call
right.
Ricky, cause,
I'll be Cuneo. His
pecs. Yeah, you got to be Cuneo.
Yeah,
because you're the down to earth one, you know. So
it's true.
That's how it goes.
It's totally how it is.
It is. Yeah. Well, what are some new ideas though that you'd like to see River City Girls 2? I mean, I'll say it right now: online co-op.
If they don't have online co-op, I'm gonna cry foul yet again and criminal. I would like to see maybe now this would be expanding and breaking away a little bit from the exact norm, but. More mini games, even kind of stuff that you could do. I know that there are secrets in the game, as far as like, you know, getting all the busts of the principal broken, and there are some secret areas, but I remember that there was like secret item shops in River City Ransom that you could go and get very specific things that would like boost up your stats. I think just kind of more stuff like that, and a little bit more variety and enough secrets that the internet isn't going to ruin it in the first like week. You know, and I know that's hard. I know it's hard to really hide things from people, but I love it when like people played through it X amount of times and they go, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this was a secret or this was an option. And I always love those things to bring people back into the game who feel like they've already exhausted it. But oh no, but wait, there's more. Yeah. Love that stuff.
The secrets are great. More playable characters. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's something constructive. So purchasing things from Dojo in this game and getting like new upgrades and stuff like that, some of them just were not useful in my
agreed
view.
Yeah, that's true. They seemed fillery.
So yeah, so more like meaningful additions, like maybe like unlocking the ability to combine pre-existing special moves into like new special moves, like so
so more of a broad
unlocking
tree
the ability
of
unlocking the ability to like to cancel moves into each other. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say that maybe. Mm-hmm. So unlocking like timing requirements or something like that. That would be interesting.
Unlocking co-op moves that we both have to do, and that becomes an ultra powerful co-op move. Man. Okay, Kairos.
That's like Simpsons. Didn't they have
yes, the
combo
tag team
co-op?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bart would get on Homer's shoulders and start like swinging or whatever. Yeah. He'd swing and the combo moves were the best. Yeah,
that's so, what you got to do. Yeah,
but if you're gonna I'd online co-op and then add some flair to the co-op experience that you know work together and, but not with a bunch of complex button entries because then you're just gonna make you know everybody mad at each other.
Right, and I saw that one of the things that they wanted to do with River City Girls is keep like the input simple, like like Super Smash Brothers. Where like you've got like tilt moves and you've got your smashes and stuff like that, but it's not like a complex, you know, like do full quarter circle, you know, A B and the L1
forward
press
back
start
half and circle, and then exactly. This, and as it charges up right before it flashes, push X. And you're like, oh gosh,
yeah. Because that works for those, but it also creates like a really big skill barrier.
Yeah,
and I don't think a beat 'em ups need that skill barrier. Like I think there should be a level of casual chill to a game like River City Girls, and it's a difficult game. Like I got game overs in it. But, you know, you don't have, I mean, you're not losing lives. There's no continued system. You just lose some cash. So keep it that way. You know, I think it'd be great.
And getting a game over because you did the input sequence wrong when you think you were doing it right. That's where controllers get thrown, you know?
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Well, I think we've got one last audience question here. And like I said, it was discovering there's so few people that have played this. It's a shame we didn't get more engagement on the subject, but I hope that, and this has happened in the past, and this is my favorite thing, when somebody tells me, I listened to your podcast and decided to try the game because of the episode. That's cool.
This should be one of those episodes.
I hope so. If you're listening to this episode and try out River City Girls, let me know. That's really cool. I want to hear your thoughts. But as far as audience questions, if you want to ask a question or share a comment to get a mention on this show, then you'll need to keep an eye out on my Twitter at the Well-Read Mage, where I announce the topics for each MageCast episode in advance, or you can email me at thewellreadmage@gmail.com. The next episode is going to be about Maniac Mansion.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, I love
There's
that
There's a lot of depth into that one.
Oh, yeah. The lore, the fluff.
Putting hamsters into microwaves.
Maniac Mansion. So get your questions ready for that. I'll be announcing that week after next. I don't know. I'll be announcing it down the road.
It'll be announced. Just follow him on Twitter, guys. Right. Just do that.
Right. Jeez.
Jeez, Koss, come on.
Well, this last question here is from JTorto40. Always reliable. Always can depend on. The beat-em-up genre really seems to be going through a revival period lately. With that in mind, what aspects of game development for River City Girls were focused on to help this game stand out? I think we talked a lot about that question fundamentally in terms of, you know, like its stylishness, its authenticity to River City Ransom, its RPG elements, its open gameplay. Mm-hmm. So what I really want to touch on in that great question is the Neo beat-em-up era that we live in now, that like there are new beat-em-ups like this one that are great, like mm-hmm. Streets of Rage 4 is apparently amazing.
I got the limited run, so I played it way after everybody, but again, another great homage to the series. It worked really, really well. There are, you know, modern beat-em-ups, but I think he's right, a lot of it is going through a revival because they saw what people loved and what worked before. And again, much to the testament of, I would say, Streets of Rage 4 and River City Girls, people could play this as their first one ever and go, wow, this is awesome. There were games like this before, and might even dig back into history to go and see where the roots came from and quite enjoy themselves. Because there was a formula that worked with the right flair that worked really, really well. And I think that revival is very appropriate.
Yes, absolutely. There is a game that I really want to give a shout out to. I know we just talked about Streets 4, but I want to give you the opportunity to, if there's like a Neo beat 'em up that you want to shout out, definitely. The one that I want to shout out is Fight and Rage. Did you play that? Oh my goodness.
I have that on my wish list and whatnot. No, I haven't. I've heard a lot of people speak really highly about that one.
It is from a Brazilian developer. Who I tried to get on this show, but he was uncomfortable speaking in English for a very prolonged period of time. Mm-hmm. Even tried to get like a friend to do like live translations, and it just didn't pan out, which is one of my main regrets with MageCast, that mm-hmm. I never was able to get him on the show. But when I played this game, I was floored. It is such a great modern Neo beat-em-up. Multiple diverging paths. So again, one of the things that I come into a beat 'em up with is, how is this not going to be repetitive? Because like the format kind of lends itself towards being repetitive. So there are multiple branching paths. There's like something like 30, like two or three dozen different endings, depending on like which paths you take.
Wow.
There are three different characters who are very different from each other. Ricardo, who's this giant like minotaur, Gal, who is like this tiny little female ninja, and then maybe the greatest video game character name in history, F. Norris. Like when I was like, they can't, that's as a martial artist, oh my goodness, I died.
Oh,
that
is wow,
you can't say it on this show. But
yeah, that's hilarious. Well, I guess I have to get that immediately. But the only other thing is, as I did kind of mention offline when we were talking for the show, is that I did, doing some research, it just happened to pop up on Steam, and Steam only, is available as River City Ransom Underground, which was developed Kanatus Creative and published by Kanatus Creative. It was released in 2017, February, early 2017. I watched the trailer for it, and I was like, it is the exact same style of River City Ransom, the like same pixels, all that stuff, but it looks like double frames per second. So instead of 15, it looks like 30 frames per second. There's 7 different characters you could play as, and it looks just really, really creative from Kanatus Creative. They put the creative in their name. Wow. But yeah, $20 on Steam, and I feel like if this has online co-op, I wouldn't mind playing this with you on stream.
Especially if what? We need to set up like a co-op.
Online co-op. Yep, online co-op is done.
Like,
yep.
Like not just, I mean, like a segment. Cause like what I'm trying to do, I don't want to talk about my stream.
You got to cross promote, sir.
I'm going to
twitch.tv/thewellreadmage/onlyfans. No, sorry.
So what I want to do though is, I mean, the red mage is about variety, right? The red mage is about a little bit of black, a little bit of white, a little bit of blue, even getting some, you know, a whole bevy of that. But I'm not a professional gamer. I'm not a speedrunner. I'm not like Farmer Sly Joe Bob. Shout out to that guy. It's just like, oh, he beat Super Mario World in under an hour. I'm like, actual speedrunners would scoff at that time. Like that's fast for me. But like a regular speedrunner of that game is just like, yeah, no, I fell asleep. I'm not like, you know, amazing at games or anything like that. I just like to play games, talk about games, and critique games. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do with the stream though is come up with variety, and so I'll play a different game every day. I don't just stream one game. So like this next week we're going to be doing our backloggery randomizer because we hit 100 follows.
Nice.
I'm going to be playing a segment with, and thank you very much everybody for those follows, I really appreciate it. A new segment that I'm creating called Nostalgia Testers, where I play a game with somebody who was not alive when that game came out. So that you can kind of push back against that idea of like, that's all just nostalgia, those old games.
Yeah.
But play it with younger people who weren't even alive back then. So I'm playing Donkey Kong Country 2 with my kid brother who was born in 2000. Donkey Kong Country 2 is like, what, 95? So
something like that,
he
yeah.
missed it by definitely like mid-90s. 5 years. Yeah. Yeah. So or 96, something like that. And then Wednesday is playing Final Fantasy 2 Pixel Remaster. Fridays finishing up River City Girls. But so all that to say, variety, I totally want to have like a co-op night where I regularly do like with different people, a co-op event and just like make that a regular recurring part of the stream, because I think that would be really exciting.
Those are fun, and whether you use Parsec or whatnot, yeah, we can try to make it happen. And yeah, River City Ransom Underground is online co-op 4-player deathmatch, 500 unique street fighting moves, dozens of weapons. Yeah,
great.
Yeah,
that sounds great. We got to do right River City Dudes. We got to do River City Underground. This will be great. This will be fun.
Yeah.
So, woo. Neo beat 'em ups. Whew, there's some good ones out there.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, and soundtrack too. I mean, soundtrack for River City Girls, fantastic. Soundtrack for Fight and Rage, dude. Listen to that sometime.
Okay.
Shredding.
Oh, that's definitely it's on amazing. The list now. That's high up on the list now to play.
Super good. And then Streets 4. Streets 4 has like an incredible soundtrack as well. So there's.
Well, I have that on Switch, so we could online co-op that as well.
You have Streets 4 on Switch?
Yes, I assume you do as well. Or did you get it on PS4?
I don't. No, I didn't buy it. But I should buy it, and then we can do Streets 4 co-op. That'd be great.
That's true. Well, whatever you plan, just let me know, and when I can slot on in, I'd love to game with you on stream. It'd be fun.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. Man. Okay, so sorry everybody listening is like, we had to listen to you guys talk shop. No, you did. And you'll thank me for it.
That's right.
But to close this out, Sanity, Aaron, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate
thanks for
it.
Having me again, man. It's always a good time talking to you, and especially we get to talk about the good stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't talk about – I know. When you did that episode on Mary-Kate and Ashley's driver's license game. Yeah. I know you asked me, and I refused, but still.
I knew you played it. Like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, Sanity's all over this. Come on.
Dang it, saw that.
I mean, yeah, I can see right through your peppermint lies. Well, where can we find you? Where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on Twitter. You can find me at Sanity Crypto right there. You can find me. I don't stream on my main account on Twitch almost ever. I've only done it a few times. Anytime I do even gaming streaming, aside from our show on Mondays and Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, it is at It's Virtually a Podcast. And then you can just check us out there. You can watch some of our videos on demand and see if it's a show you'd actually be into. Again, it's a little raw, a little raunchy at times. So it's definitely a lot of degenerate people having a lot of fun. But then we also play games there too. We also do party nights, do Jackbox, stuff like that. So it's a good time. So you guys can find us there on twitch.tv/itsvirtuallyapodcast. And that's probably the most important place you can find me. But you can also find me in the Pixels Discord chat of the Well-Read Mage's Discord. So
you just plug all my stuff instead.
That's right. Like, okay. That's right. If you're not gonna, I'm gonna right now.
Nah, I'm gonna. I just got to record a separate thing for it.
Okay.
I swear I'm gonna. Yeah. Well, thanks. I mean, you're a diamond and also a little bit of a spade too.
That's true. Thanks. Well, my heart goes out to you, sir.
Oh, let's go hit it up at the club. I don't know. Yeah. I just had to figure out how to get joke all the to hearts.
Death. Ha-ha.
There it is. Yes. There it is. That would have been much better, much more appropriate.
Yeah.
There's a 6-player X-Men cabinet.
Oh, you found it. Okay, cool.
I found it. After all, I'm closing tabs right now, and I was like, yeah, there's totally a 6-player. That's great. Amazing. But anyways, thanks so much for listening. Thanks, Aaron. Take care.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, guys, go play River City Girls. Thank us later.
If you haven't, yeah, seriously, it's amazing. I'm not going to buy it for you, but go play it. It's so good.
I might. If DM Red and let him know how much you want me to buy it for you. That's how it's going.
What? I'm going to make a fake account and just like be like, so this guy named the Rouge Magician would like you to sponsor his purchase of River City Girl.
It's just your avatar with a mustache. What are you doing?
How did he see through my clever ruse?
That's right.
All right. Good night. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks very much for listening. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode of MageCast. If you're still craving more magic, visit thepixels.com, that's the-pixels.com, and patreon.com/thepixels. You can join our Discord to be a part of the conversation, link in the description, or find me on Twitter at @thewellreadmage or live streaming at twitch.tv/thewellreadmage. This episode may be over, but the legend will live on, passed down by the dwarves, the elves, and the dragons.